This is Captain Rick reporting. I'm back with part two of the Wednesday, August 19th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. I'll be starting with the obituaries. Abby Ruth Bernard, Decatur. Abby Ruth Bernard, 87, formerly of Bloomington, Illinois, died Sunday, August 16th, at Imboden Creek Living Center in Decatur. She was born October 14th, 1927, in Webster Groves, Missouri, the daughter of William T. Wallace and Mary Hammond Wallace. She married Robert Clarence Barnard on June 28, 1951, in Warsaw, Illinois, at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. Graveside services to celebrate the life of Abby Bernard will be 1:30 p.m. Thursday, August 20th, in Oakland Cemetery in Warsaw, Illinois. Memorials may be directed to the family to be designated at a later date. The family of Abby Bernard is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Joseph E. Dewey, Decatur. Joseph E. Dewey, 75, of Paxton, passed away Sunday, August 16th, in Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Services will be 11 a.m. Friday in Paxton First United Methodist Church. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday in Beyer Family Funeral Services, Paxton, and 1 hour before services in the church. Burial will be in Glen Cemetery, Paxton. Memorials, Paxton Day Care Center, Paxton Foundation, or Donor's Choice. Janice L. Redding, Decatur. Janice L. Redding, 77, of Decatur, danced through heaven's gates at 5:20 p.m. Thursday, August 13th, in St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Celebration of life and first birthday in heaven will be celebrated Saturday, August 29th, at 11 a.m. at First General Baptist Church in Decatur for close friends, family, and church family. The family would like to give special thanks to Norma Hunt for her strength and kindness. The First General Baptist Church family for all the phone calls, prayers, and visits. Memorials may be directed to the First General Baptist Church in Decatur. The family of Janice L. Redding is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home in Decatur. Larry D. Rushner, Rusher. Stonington. Larry D. Rusher, 73, Stonington, died Sunday, August 16th. Services, 10 a.m. Thursday, Sutton Memorial Home, Taylorville. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday. Lewis Matthew Shannon, Decatur. Infant Lewis Matthew Shannon died prematurely at 4:10 p.m. Sunday at Decatur Memorial Hospital, leaving parents Robert Shannon and Emily Giles of Urbana, brother William, grandfather Bernie, and grandmother Mona Shannon, all of Champaign. He was preceded in death by his maternal grandmother, Susan Gillies, and paternal grandfather, Mark Shannon. Family graveside services will be held at Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown. Britlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, will be assisting the family with arrangements. Phyllis J. Stein, Argenta. Phyllis J. Fid Stein, 70, Argenta, Illinois, went into the arms of Jesus at 12:46 a.m. Saturday, August 15th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital after complications from surgery. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 20th, at Argenta Baptist Church, Argenta, with Pastor Will Ferguson officiating. Burial will follow at Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at the church. Memorials may be made to Argenta Baptist Church. The family has entrusted Calvert Funeral Home, Argenta, with arrangements. Kathleen Yackey Stewardson. Kathleen Yackey, 93, of Stewardson, passed away at 6:55 p.m. Sunday, August 16th, in her home. Massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 20th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Shumway. Reverend Zachary Edgar will officiate. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at the Brumstelt Funeral Home in Stewardson. Burial will be at the Stewardson Cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. Mary's Catholic Church, United Methodist Deaf and Hard of Hearing Ministry, Carl Auditory Oral School, or Trinity Lutheran School Building Fund. The first article is entitled, Stedman to Hang Up His Judicial Robe in November 2016. Decatur. After serving as a judge in Macon County for more than 20 years, Timothy J. Stedman has decided to hang up his robe. I just figured this was the right time, said Stedman, who has been working mostly in the criminal law division, presiding over many of the county's high-profile cases. I want to do different things, a change of pace. I don't plan to sit around and do nothing. I want to spend more time with my family. I'd love to travel around and see the White Sox. Stedman, 60, an associate judge since 1995, was appointed as a residential circuit judge May 14, 2014, to fill the remainder of Lisa Holder White's term after she was assigned to the appellate court. He plans to complete his six-year term, which ends November 30, 2016. Stedman said he chose this time to announce his retirement to allow potential candidates for the position to have time to take advantage of the opportunity. He hopes one of his colleagues will replace him. We have a real fine group of associate judges right now, Stedman said. The first day for a candidate to circulate petitions is September 30th. The filing period is November 23rd through the 30th, said Dave Flannel, Chief Judge of the 6th Judicial Circuit. The candidates will compete in the March 15th primary and November 8th general election. We hate to lose him, Flannel said. after hearing the news of Stedman's retirement. There is a terrific loss for the circuit. He has a lot of good experience. He is a good man. He did a lot of heavy lifting for us, a lot of important cases. In addition to taking on a significant number of murder cases in Macon County, Stedman has also served on several homicide cases in DeWitt County. Anytime I ask him for help, he's always willing to help, Flannel said, adding that Macon County is one of the two busiest counties in the circuit. There's a lot of volume, a lot of serious cases. We are really going to miss him. Stedman, a Southside Chicago native, was hired as an assistant state's attorney in the Macon County State's Attorney's Office shortly after graduating from John Marshall Law School in 1981. He had no idea where Decatur was located, but when he saw an index card indicating there was a job opening here, he thought it might be a good opportunity to obtain income to begin paying off his student loans. I got hired right away, Stedman recalled. Basil Greenias took me to Fairview Park and we pitched horseshoes. That was my interview. Stedman, who had not been warned about the unusual methods of the county's chief prosecutor, wondered, "Is this really the state's attorney?" I thought, "Is this a joke?" Stedman asked. The next article is entitled, "Stedman to Hang Up His Judicial Robe in November 2016. Decatur. After serving as a judge in Macon County for more than 20 years, Timothy J. Stedman has decided to hang up his robe. I just figured this was the right time, said Stedman, who has been working mostly in the criminal law division, pending over many of the county's high-profile cases. I want to do different things, a change of pace. I don't plan to sit around and do nothing. I want to spend more time with my family. I'd love to travel around and see the White Sox." Stedman, 60, an associate judge since 1995, was appointed as a resident circuit judge July 14, 2014, to fill the remainder of Lisa Holder White's term after she was assigned to the appellate court. He plans to complete the 6-year term, which ends November 30, 2016. Stedman said he chose this time to announce his retirement to allow potential candidates for the position to have time to take advantage of the opportunity. He hopes one of his colleagues will replace him. "We have a real fine group of associate judges right now," Stedman said. The first day for a candidate to circulate petitions is September 30th. The filing period is November 23rd through the 30th, said Dave Flannel, chief judge of the 6th Judicial Circuit. The candidates will compete in the March 15th primary and November 8th general election. "We hate to lose him," Flannel said, after hearing the news of Stedman's retirement. This is a terrific loss for the circuit. He has a lot of good experience. He's a good man. He did a lot of heavy lifting for us, a lot of important cases. In addition to taking on a significant number of murder cases in Macon County, Stedman also has taken on several homicide cases in DeWitt County. Anytime I ask him for help, He's always willing to help, Flannel said, adding that Macon County is one of the two busiest counties in the circuit. There's a lot of volume, a lot of serious cases. We are really going to miss him. Stedman, a Southside Chicago native, was hired as an assistant state's attorney in the Macon County State's Attorney's Office shortly after graduating from John Marshall Law School in 1981. He had no idea where Decatur was located, but when he saw an index card indicating there was a job opening here, he thought it might be a good opportunity to obtain income to begin paying off his student loans. I got hired right away. I got hired right away, Stedman recalled. Basil Grinias took me to Fairview Park and we pitched horseshoes. That was my interview. Stedman, who had not been warned about the unusual methods of the county's chief prosecutor, wondered, is this really the state's attorney? I thought, is this a joke? Stedman said. When can you start? Grinias asked him. His eccentricities were overshadowed by his ability to hire effective prosecutors, Stedman said. Among those who Grinias hired during his 5 terms in office were several others who went on to become judges, including current judges Scott Diamond and James Coryell. Stedman originally thought he would migrate back to Chicago after a stint in Decatur, but his plans were altered after he met his future wife, Robin. He became acquainted with the county reporter while playing volleyball at a gathering at the home of Jack Ahala, who was an assistant state's attorney at that time. After Robin Stedman took a job as a court reporter in Danville, Stedman hired on as a prosecutor in Champaign County. 3 years later, the Macon County state's attorney lured him back to Decatur with an offer of a better paycheck. He was working at the Macon County Courts facility and has been since then. Stedman enjoyed the trial work as a prosecutor, but found some of the preparations challenging and frustrating. One time, he accompanied an investigator to West Virginia to serve a subpoena on a reluctant witness. There was one person in the courthouse, Stedman recalled. He was the clerk, the judge, and everything else. We had to get a subpoena from him. Many people in the area did not want to help us to find that witness. Stedman said he wanted to become a judge from the first time he started practicing law. When you're a judge, all you're seeing is a final product, he said. Being in court's the fun part. Getting the case ready for trial's not so much fun. He found the judge's lot to be a fascinating one, in which he could employ his knowledge of rules of evidence as well as his ability to think on his feet. It's a fantastic job, a very interesting job. Not an easy job, but very interesting. The next article is entitled, Decatur Teens Arrested After July 31st Shooting Incident. Decatur. An 18-year-old Decatur man is being held in the Macon County Jail on $100,000 bond after he was arraigned Tuesday on 4 felony counts in connection with an incident in which the passenger of a vehicle he was driving shot a man with a shotgun. Cherise Hendricks is allegedly threatened the victim and other man with a handgun. The victim, who suffered gunshot wounds to his left arm and hand, told police a specific 17-year-old male, the front seat passenger in a gray Ford Escape, shot him as he drove away from the scene in another vehicle. The Ford SUV was parked in the driveway of a house on the 3200 block of East Garfield Avenue at the time of the incident, which occurred the night of July 31st. The victim told police the 17-year-old fired 4 to 5 times at him and the vehicle as they, the victim and another passenger, fled the scene, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Brian Kaler. The victim and his passenger reported to police that prior to the shooting, the driver of the SUV pointed a handgun at them. The victim identified the driver as Hendricks in a photo lineup. Police encountered the victim, at the Decatur Memorial Hospital emergency room, where he had arrived for treatment at about 10:50 p.m. July 31st. A physician told police the victim sustained multiple entrance wounds on his left forearm, left hand, and left middle finger. An X-ray showed multiple foreign bodies in his left arm, consistent with being shot by a shotgun, Kaler wrote in his statement. Officers subsequently located 4 spent 16-gauge shotgun shells in the driveway of the house where the incident occurred. Hendricks was located August 11th by Special Deputy U.S. Marshal Lorne Sturtevant and booked into the Macon County Jail. The 17-year-old was also arrested and booked into the Peoria County Juvenile Detention Center. Hendricks was arraigned on 1 count of aggravated battery with a firearm, a Class X felony, 2 counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm, and 1 count of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. He is due in court for a hearing to present his attorney on Tuesday. More to follow. The next article is entitled, Stu Ellis, Group Seeks Answers to Ag Questions. Every week in this column contains my 2 cents worth, but in all courtesy to readers, it should also include the issues that are on their minds. Engaging the Decatur Noon Kiwanis Club on Tuesday as an unofficial research sounding board, their interests may reasonably reflect some of the issues of interest to a broad slice of the community. After visiting with the members about the upcoming Farm Progress Show and other agricultural issues, they had many questions. Since the Farm Progress Show rotates from Decatur to Boone, Iowa, how do you compare the two show sites? The site for Progress City was selected because of inbound vehicle access using Interstate 72 and potentially 4 lanes of inbound traffic on Brush College Road to get visitors into parking areas as efficiently as possible. The Iowa site has a 4-lane road nearby, but once off that thoroughfare, traffic is on a 2-lane rural road. Progress City was built to handle heavy rain, which so far has not affected the show here. Iowa seems to have rain nearly every show, and the storm sewer system there has been challenged at times. Could Decatur become the only location? The folks at Farm Progress don't want to abandon their presence in Iowa, because a competing farm show could take over the Boone site, and Farm Progress would lose a large share of the Corn Belt market. Has the Farm Progress show generated any permanent jobs? The only jobs serving Progress City have been at Richland Community College, and it has had a manager for most of the time until this summer. Management of Progress City has been turned over to the manager of facilities at Richland. Was not Progress City designed to be a location for economic development? That was the initial intent, with a vision for many of the larger exhibit spaces to become permanent facilities that could be used for marketing, sales, training, and other functions needed by agribusinesses. So far, that has not happened, since it needs a champion to move that forward, and there is no individual or agency who has taken that up. There could be a lot of development at Richland in that direction, such as a training facility for agricultural drone pilots, who will need FAA certification. Decatur will have its second drone show in 2 years at the Farm Progress Show. A third event is scheduled here in January, and we could become a central point for unmanned aerial vehicles. One of the television networks carried a story about California farmers pumping out water for irrigation that had been underground for 1,000 years. How will regulations in California affect farmers here? Farmers are quite concerned about what is transpiring in California because of the precedents that may be set. Regulations could be developed there and will ripple across the country, impacting farmers in the Corn Belt. And whoever or whatever controls access to water and controls soil health will be the ultimate authority on what crops are produced where and when and how. For example, the new water rule from the Environmental Protection Agency, which becomes effective on August 28th, gives the agency control over ephemeral water, which is water that collects in a low spot after a rainfall, but then dissipates. In that sense, the EPA could collect samples of pond water standing in a corn or soybean field and then cite the farmer if it contains traces of pesticides. We will have to see what water and soil regulations hold for farmers who are trying to produce enough food for the country and the world. And that's the end of part 2 of the Wednesday, August 19th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. This has been Captain Rick reporting. Have a great rest of the day.